Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. Today's guest has more than two decades of experience as a technology executive, international M&A lawyer, management consultant, and an entrepreneur. He was a co-founder and CEO of a healthcare tech company called Health Access Solutions, which him and his team scaled and then sold in March of 2016. He's currently the founder of Ironheart Corporate Advisory, an operating partner to high potential companies focusing on making a disruptive impact. During this conversation, we discuss being opportunistic, uncovering huge market opportunities, and the entrepreneur's game. Now, let's hack Chris Malander. I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor for supporting the show, Brand 24. 80% of consumers do research or ask online before making a buying decision. Brand 24 gives you the listening tools to find these leads, identify where to promote products, and find customers before they find you. With social search, you can search the web for key topics, trends, or discussions. Brand 24 also enables you to reach customers so you can react and engage quickly to real-time comments made about your brand. Imagine all the channels in one place. That's Brand 24. Plus, with their Apple and Android apps, you can track customers' trends and insights on the go, anywhere you are. Find out right now why over 100,000 companies are using Brand 24 to monitor the web. Whether you're a one-person business, startup, or Fortune 500 company, Brand 24 helps you discover your digital footprint worldwide. Start hacking your brand at brand24.com/hack with a 14-day free trial. And as a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, I've got you an exclusive 50% off your very first 3 months. Get started today at brand24.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John.
I am really happy you could take the time to join me. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun, Chris.
I agree. This is great. Thanks.
Let's jump into it, shall we?
Okay.
All right. Chris, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Right. I think it's might have a fairly diversified career. And the one thing that stands out for me that I think is different is around being able to understand and decrypt systems and then figuring out, do we play within those or do we write new rules for new types of systems or games? And John, maybe it makes sense to kind of tell you what that journey is, which is that exploration, which is that I began my career in Washington, D.C. as a lobbyist, working in the center of power, at least in the United States, in terms of trying to decrypt how the actors moved around and behaved and how they used language and persuasion and just brute force to get what they needed. And so there's a system that's at play, and it's a well-established system that a lot of people, there's an industry that tries to figure out how to work within that machine. And then the next step from that was a complete leap, which was I went to a global tech company and started building, and this is in the run-up to what ultimately was the 2002 tech bubble, but in the days before or the years before that, we were trying to launch as many tech businesses as we possibly could, as fast as we could. It was just go, 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 go. And in each of those cases, we're trying to figure out what's the right business model, what's the right articulation of that, what's the right financial model, and so forth. So there's a system, a game. And then from there, I went international and started an international M&A practice and ultimately did transactions in over 30 countries. But the kinds of projects that I was taking on in this case were not working within an existing system, but rather figuring out new ones. So a lot of it was international development related work. So for example, One of my major projects was working in Nigeria and designing how the oversight for a $19 billion oil and gas sector, which is one of the most corrupt sectors in the world. And so you talk about money and power. So we overlaid on top of that an oversight system. And it was the first of its kind in the world. And then from there, I went into a complete vacuum of a system, which was Iraq after the Second Gulf War, and licensed their spectrum, which had never been licensed before. Saddam Hussein never allowed it to be licensed because they couldn't wiretap it. So I was hired by the government of Iraq to figure out how they licensed the spectrum and help generate economic development within the country and rebuild that country using all the mobile technology. So this is in like 2005 and 2006. Wow. So it had never happened before that point in time. It was complete greenfields. No telecom law, no institutional base of knowledge about telecom and regulation and how to do this within the country because they'd never done it before. It was a fascinating and challenging experience. But you know, that gives you a little bit of a sense of where the systems orientation comes from. And then I went to Silicon Valley, which has its own set of rules and networks and ecosystems and worldviews. And that was there I spun a company out of a traditional healthcare company that had technology and stood up a company and grew it and increased its value by 10 times in 14 months and, you know, was quite successful in its own way. But, you know, back to your original question, John, which is what is it that you do that you think is different? It's that, which is what's the system, what's the game that we're playing and what are the rules for it? And do I like those rules? Can I succeed in those rules? Or do I need to disrupt them and change them or and create new ones? And I think that's for an entrepreneur, that's the crown jewels. That's the fun stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, across you just in that span of 4 minutes, you went across the like different fields you were in. I mean, different countries, different, completely different realms. Is there a system for like sort of decrypting the systems within sort of anything, it seems?
Yeah. I mean, there are each one of those systems is very different, but there's a lot of commonality between each one, because I think that at the end of the day, the way the system behaves comes down to the people within them, their worldviews, their triggers, their motivations, what they're trying to attain from a power and positioning and a financial perspective. And so when you decrypt each one of those systems and you break it down into those fundamental ingredients, which are what's motivating this person or this group of people or this particular market to behave the way it does, and then kind of feather it out, looking at their motivations and how they behave, you all of a sudden are way ahead of the game in terms of figuring out, hey, is this a game that I can win in and is a good pathway for me? Or do I have to do it a different way? And if I choose to disrupt, if I choose to blow it up and go a different direction, if I choose to amend or evolve the way the game is played, how do I articulate it? What's the words? How do I engage with that community? So it gets down to the people and how they're wired.
And then what was sort of your thought process of, because early or mid 90s, I guess you got a law degree and then you went into all this consulting around the world for various people and organizations and countries. And then you went into Silicon Valley to actually somewhere in there, you started like working within startups and like getting them out the door as fast as possible.
Right.
But then at some point you decided to found a company and start founding your own companies. What made you not want to stick to the really good part that you were, like the part that you were really good at, but wanted to sort of take the leadership?
Yeah, it's my career has been a little bit opportunistic in the sense that as things unfold, I tend to gravitate towards what's interesting. And the way that the Silicon Valley journey unfolded from what was previously an international M&A practice was that this company was doing a joint venture it was a software company. I was doing a joint venture with a software company in the UK, and they needed a lawyer to help with all of that together. And we did, and that took about almost a year. But as part of that process, I got to know the board of directors and the C-levels within this tech company in the peninsula area of the Bay Area. And they said, hey, we think we have a lot of potential here. This is in the wake of Obamacare being passed and seeking to change the way the rules around healthcare are being practiced, which is one of the most inefficient and broken industries in the United States. We are the way that we practice medicine, the way that we use technology to support physicians and patients is different. And we think we have a massive opportunity, but we're only in California right now. And would you be willing to be one of the founders of this company and help us take it to the next level? And that I, yeah, absolutely. That what a fantastic journey. What a fantastic opportunity to go create something new, which was existing technology and clients and a pathway, but to create something entirely new and it involved everything from new products to new identity to hiring a ton of really fantastic, bright people. So yeah, I had a blank tableau to work with. And so that's the kind of stuff that I've gravitated towards.
So it's really that a little bit opportunistic. I like that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And looking for the challenges. But I mean, according to your LinkedIn, you then left Health Access Solutions March 2016. And in that same month, you started your new company.
That's right. That's right.
So was that sort of an opportunity you saw? Or is it as soon as one's done, it's like, I just need to do something else. That's what I do.
There is,
I'm trying to get inside your head here.
Yeah, I got it. So we sold Health Access Solutions to another company, another technology company out in California. And so then I had the opportunity to say, all right, next iteration, what do you want to create? And I assembled a team of people that I'd worked with historically. And, you know, these are some of the best and the brightest. These are people that I just love. And we came together as part of Ironheart. And the idea with Ironheart was a market opportunity that we saw, which is that a lot of the companies that we were working with, particularly in Silicon Valley, but also across the country, were at an earlier stage of development and having a hard time accessing key domains, key kinds of expertise that are available to big corporations that pay, you know, a lot of money to consultants and advisors and things of that nature. But because of the financial limitations of earlier stage companies, they typically don't have that. So the model for Ironheart is that we are an operating partner to technology companies and come in and provide strategy and finance and HR and other sorts of services on a, you know, proportional basis that they can afford and help them get that really high level of expertise that's going to, you know, exponentially increase their probabilities of success. So that was the opportunity that we saw, in part because we'd lived that experience, in part because we had been there ourselves and said, when we were doing Health Access Solutions, what expertise would we love to have right now if we could just figure out the right model to buy it? And so that's what we've built with Ironheart.
Okay. So it makes a lot more sense now when you explain it that way. As you sell off the one company, then you sort of take the best of the best from your team and put them together to help other companies.
That's right.
It's the opportunity. Right. So you personally, as growing these companies, as being a consultant yourself, how do you utilize like consultants and advisors within your own company?
Yeah, we have, you know, my career has always been as, you know, significantly as a consultant. And then I've hired a significant number of consultants and lawyers and investment bankers and that sort of thing. And so, you know, we're constantly putting together teams and keep a very active network of all of these different domains so that we're able to partner with them, contract with them, hire them, recommend them, refer them, whatever it takes to help a particular client on their pathway. And it changes. And it's a little bit, you know, you've got to, you know, the benefit of having that diversified background that I do, I think, is that I've seen the problem from so many different angles that when we have a client that says, here's what we're trying to solve, X, I've been there. I've been in their shoes. I've seen this movie before. And I think that's helpful, is to be able to then compress the learning curve, compress the time that it takes us to make those decisions, get the right consultants and advisors engaged, make sure that they're pointed in the right direction. And we're really efficient about that. And that way we tap into some of the best expertise that's in the market, but do it in a way that's efficient and cost effective.
Right. But you use them, I mean, like within your company, like when you need to figure out the systems of a new company somewhere, like you're treading now into land you haven't been before. Do you go and grab advisors and consultants yourself?
Not necessarily.
You know what I mean? I'm trying to see, like,
we sit there as somewhat like I'm trying to think of a metaphor to describe it. We're a little bit more like we'll tell the client, we'll help the client figure out what advisors they need to solve that problem, as opposed to bringing them in through Ironheart.
Okay.
So we will quarterback it is the best approach, I suppose.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so this ability to sort of decrypt systems, that's your one thing that you
told us
about, Chris.
Right.
And you've told us all the ways you've done it now throughout your career. Now let's switch gears a bit, because every sort of blog post, every business expert these days, they talk about this whole 80-20 rule, especially for very busy people like yourself. They say you're supposed to find that 20% that gives you the 80% of results, do what you're good at, and delegate the rest. Chris, could you please tell me something that you are absolutely not good at in your business?
At the risk of using up the rest of the podcast, there's many things. But the one thing is probably patience. As you can tell from our conversation, you know, I'm probably a little bit motivated to go where the fire is and for exciting dynamic projects. And so sometimes they're, you know, operationalizing things and staying with it day in and day out is my challenge, is the thing that I work is not to get caught by the shiny object. And sometimes I do it well and sometimes I don't.
Right. So the awareness of it obviously puts you miles ahead of lots of people. Did this awareness, this sort of self-awareness of this weakness within yourself, well, if it's a weakness or not, that's actually irrelevant. I think you've done quite well. So it's just a part of you. But did you maybe realize this about yourself too late?
I think so. Yeah, I do. I do. And the reason that it's a weakness is probably because you go through these cycles where you're really super jazzed about a project and you're being highly efficient, really productive and so forth. And then when you go into that wave and the wave starts to, you know, you go down into the trough and it's not quite as sexy. It's not quite as dynamic as it was. That's when you start to check out and not make as good of decisions. And then you've got to figure out ways to make it dynamic again. And so, you know, I think you're right, which is it's a matter of self-awareness and understanding where you are in that wave when it's really juicy and invigorating and you're passionate about it, and then being able to get through that trough over to the other side. And, you know, I work with a number of entrepreneurs, and I had a conversation with one that I work with the other day. And we talked about this very issue, which is that over the last 2.5-3 weeks, they were in a trough. And it can feel like, even if you're not moving forward, because you're in the trough, it makes you feel like you're moving backwards. And I think that's an experience that I certainly experience, and I think probably others do too.
Yeah, that's huge. Seth Godin, famous mm-hmm. within this space, wrote mm-hmm. the book called The Dip, which is it's about that. As you call it, right. The trough, he calls it the dip, and it's knowing to push through. And because we struggle with, I think, even sort of not so much even checking out and not being so jazzed by it, but questioning if it's even worth it anymore or if it's the right thing that you should be focusing on.
That's right.
And it's always on the other side that something big happens, but it's so many people stop when they're still within that trough.
I think that's certainly true. And I know that personally, I'm inefficient when I'm in that trough. You know, you're spending a lot of energy, like looking for, there must be a better way. There must be something else I should be focused on. And so there's some lost time and energy associated with that.
Yeah, definitely. So this trough, this being jazzed about new projects, and then also this sort of keeping yourself from shiny object syndrome leads and segues very nicely into a discussion about projects. So you, right before this call, you told me about another project you are working on. It's like a training program called the Entrepreneur's Game, bringing sort of the high level consulting that you know to bigger like companies with millions and millions of dollars to spend on consultants and bringing it down to way more people.
That's
sort of the middle ground of entrepreneurship, which is a super valuable thing. But as we've seen in the past 16 minutes, Chris, you are an extremely busy person. You must be, because you've done more than most people will accomplish in 50 years, and you're still at it. And I know that there's stuff even on that doing my research that we haven't even discussed of what you're up to. So you're a busy guy, probably with lots of ideas, probably with lots of things coming to you. I would love to know sort of your process, and whether that's a written process or like an internal gut process, but of all the things happening in your life, of all the things and opportunities that come to you personally or are brought to you from your network, how do you decide that something like the Entrepreneur's Game is worth your time, energy, and resources?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think, so first of all, just to close the loop, this is the latest shiny object that I have. And I find it I can get very passionate about it. It's pretty sexy stuff. And you frame that just right, which is that what we're doing is taking insights and wisdom and tools and technologies and methodologies that, you know, are available to big companies with significant budgets to go and hire advisors to do that oftentimes earlier stage companies can't access. So, you know, step one of my process really is can I personally get really jazzed about it? And the answer, of course, to the entrepreneur's game is yes. The second piece of this is, I think there's a significant market opportunity, which is that there is entrepreneurship and innovation is really key to the fabric of how our economy and society are built. And it is fun, exciting stuff. And there are, you know, hundreds of thousands of millions of entrepreneurs out there in so many different domains, but they don't have access to what's the best pathway. How do I make the most efficient decision? I'm coming up to a fork in the road. Do I go left or do I go right? So the idea with the entrepreneur's game is to provide those tools and technologies and methodologies in on a chassis that works for them. And what that means is it's available online, that they can access it remotely anytime that they want to. And it's also at a price point, which is much more accessible for the individual entrepreneur or the small founding team and things of that nature. And so I think, you know, that's my second litmus test, which is, can I get jazzed about it? A, but B, can we serve a lot of people with this? And I think that the answer is yes.
Okay. So there's three sort of things in there. The person, are you personally jazzed about it? Yes. Huge market opportunity. And then sort of the availability and being able to reach a lot of people.
Yeah.
Let's talk about number two, this huge market opportunity. Where is this, like, data or is this a gut assumption? Just because it seems like you have been playing bigger and bigger and bigger games, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then does this, like, step down or sideways from that? Or, like, it, you know what I mean? Like, you've played some massive things. You've had some huge acquisitions, those kind of things. You've worked for countries. And now you're getting into online education, which can be massive, obviously. Like, Lindo is a $1 billion company. But is that how you see it? Or do you see, like, you can create this huge market opportunity?
I feel it. I feel there's a huge opportunity. And it's a bit of an experiment, and I might be wrong. But here's what I do know as well, which is that my career began in 1993. I mean, this is literally, I remember a project that I initially did with a lawyer in DC, in which we bought this, like, 60-page little, you know, 40-point type book. It was like the first book that said email is going to be a big deal. And we literally were reading that. This is pre-email. And it really taking off. And, you know, my point with it is that now I think where the opportunity is and this path is really being developed in a huge way by many other entrepreneurs. But historically, I would have sold these services through one-on-one relationships with people that I know within large companies or law firms or countries and things of that nature. It is a trust-based relationship, one-to-one. It's a B2B sale. We have the opportunity now where I can take business content, so the business side of this, and sell it on a consumer basis. And it's being able to use Facebook and Google to reach out there and touch many people who I don't know and who don't know me. That changes the whole chassis of this thing. And I think that's where the disruptive opportunity is, which is to deliver that sophisticated advisory services or the content from that in a package that's accessible, but by being able to reach literally millions, hundreds of millions, billions of types of people. And being able to get it into the right people, so with the ability to target it based on their defined interests. We never had that in the first 20 years of my career, really, or 15 years of my career. And so that's part of the opportunity here.
Right. So from buying that first, like, as we call them now, ebooks, but a PDF or something in 96 sure. or 93, to seeing the opportunities now, it seems like you've been thinking about this, and I guess I could push it to say that you've sort of been decrypting the system of targeting and approaching the right people and hitting the right people?
You know, you asked also a little bit about the process. And sometimes I think that I and perhaps we, you know, you're decrypting a system all the time, even when you're not aware of it. And so then part of it is being able to step back and say, hey, I think this is where the opportunity is. And then you really consciously look at the system. So it's being able to catch those ideas out of the air when they arise. And some people get them faster than others, and I'm not one of those. But I think that's where I see the opportunity to build that out. And by the way, just to correct that, we didn't buy an ebook in 93. It wasn't available. We had to go down to Barnes & Noble and get a hard copy book to tell us about email.
That's true. Sorry, my problem there. So with a project like this, it seems like quite large in scale and sort of your heart behind it and your passion behind this project. And what you feel that you can, the change you can affect from it to the millions of people. What sort of success metrics do you put on it, or do you? And sort of what timelines do you give yourself to determine if this project is indeed a success or you need to just shelf it and move on to something else?
Sure, sure. The success metrics are, you know, my goal is to have this launched in 30 days. I've been working on it for a fair bit of time up to this point in time. And being very comfortable with the technologies and the platforms that can be used, which is a whole separate digression, John, which is I have the ability to build a business like this now using tools that weren't available 3 years ago or 5 years ago or certainly 10. The state of technology that allows me as an individual to develop this new product set is phenomenal. And so that creates the opportunity as well, which is that, and I think that's only going to increase. And I think for entrepreneurs that are out there and you know, my kids who are teenagers and that sort of thing, the pace is so fast that what they'll have, the impact that they can make using platforms like this is only going to improve on an exponential basis. So I'm learning that, and that's part of my journey, my personal journey as well, which is that, you know, I've been in this business for 25 years now, and part of it, I'm almost 50 years old now, is I'm not going to start checking out. I want to stay with the current pace of this, of the changes, the memes, the trends that are taking place within our society and economy. And so what's success for me? Success for me, there's obviously financial objectives. There's obviously the desire to touch a lot of people and people that I don't know, people that we're going to find each other through social media or other sorts of online mechanisms. But I also want to, for this next stage of my career, keep current with, you know, the people that are 14 to 35 and keep pace with the pace of change. I don't want to check out. So that's a part of what's going on here too.
Nice. And so with that, that means you are going to take on the technology, choose it, set it up yourself rather than get a team to do that for you and you.
Correct. I do it all.
Because you want the education from it too.
You got it.
It's not just about scale at this point.
It's keeping me young. It's because here's a challenge of figuring out how to get all these name servers to re-coordinate in the right way in the platform.
That's such a pain in the ass.
But I know. I would love to outsource most of it. And some of it I'll outsource. There are people smarter and faster and cheaper than me. But with that said, I got to know how that works.
Totally.
And it's youthful. And I've seen so many, you know, of people that are in older generations, and you just see them gradually start to step by step fade out of what that current thrust is within a culture or a society. And I'm going to fight that. I'm going to stay young as long as I can, and I'm going to keep up with them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're from the forefront of that internet sort of generation. So
yeah,
it's
right.
I think if you're like 10 years or 15 years ahead of you, then it's hard because you didn't grow, like you weren't there with it.
Sure.
So it makes sense for you to not just gloss over and be like, none of this makes sense. Cause it does sort of, I think, innately now makes sense to you because you've been in
sure.
working within the internet for 25 years, right?
That's right. That's right.
That's okay. So we see how you are building this or why you're building this. You have a goal to launch in 30 days. Does that mean at this point you have sort of a go-to market, like marketing plan to get your first customers in the door? Like, do you have a list or do you have another sort of channel you're going to tap into?
Yeah, right now I have a beta group that's piloting the content and how that content is delivered. So these are people that I know. These are people in my community and friends and so forth. And so that's going well. And then the marketing plan, we're going to, you know, leverage Facebook and Google quite significantly as a way to do targeted marketing.
Right. So you're going to spend money to make money.
That's right.
Get the ROI there and turn it around. Okay. We are going to circle back to the entrepreneur's game because I do want to know more about it. But I do want to just wrap up, if we could, with one final question for you, Chris. It's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap, meaning this gap that I think we live in as entrepreneurs and as dreamers. We're always projecting our own personal successes into the future, meaning no matter what we accomplish ourselves and in our careers, from the outside, we can look really, really successful. To ourselves, it's always in 30 days when I launch this program. It's in 60 days when I hit that revenue metric. Whatever it happens to be, that's when we see ourselves as successful. Yet you and I both know, Chris, that seconds before you hit that goal, you're going to set 5 or 10 bigger, loftier ones into the future, which I agree we have to do, absolutely. But it's like walking towards the horizon. The further you walk, the further away it always gets. So you've been at this game a long time, Chris. You've accomplished a ton, but I would love it right now if you could stop, turn around, and look behind you, the highs, the lows, the wins, and the losses, and tell me how you feel about this journey until today.
Wow. That's a penetrating question, and I love it. It's fantastic. The journey today, it's all of the things that you just said, one of which is that it's brilliant. The people and the situations and the context and have been brilliant. And I look back now, and I think I'll look back when I'm much older and really revel in that journey and those people and those experiences. You are absolutely right, which is that there's always this feeling of, okay, I accomplished this. What can I do that's twice as big? And consequently, when you're resetting those goals or always finding that next horizon to go to, feeling like, wow, that's going to take a whole bunch more energy and new insight and learning, and it's going to take time. And those horizons, you're also absolutely right, are not in the next 30 days, in the next 60 days. So there can be, you know, some of the fuel for it is that feeling of, have I been successful enough? Have I experienced everything that I want to experience? Is there a new way to create those experiences, which we just talked about a little bit of ways of creating those experiences? And I think that's really motivating. It's not always fun, and there are tough days, and there are, you know, you've been very kind to talk about my career in the way, but there's a lot of losses along the way. I mean, when you're doing deals around the world, you're losing a lot as well. But when you look back at it in the context of what was that experience? What did you learn? What was the insight? Will you remember it? Was it influential to how you think about the world? Absolutely. You know, we learn more with some of those losses, and that's hard to hear in the days, months, and weeks, you know, weeks and months after a loss, but you learn a ton with that. And I think that's what this life is about.
Beautiful answer. Beautiful answer. Okay, Chris, we've talked about the business in passing, Ironheart, the corporate advisory, we'll link to that, but this entrepreneur's game, this is something that's really like you're actively in the trenches right now. You're getting ready to launch this. Could you give the listener out there the pitch, who it's for and what it's going to do for them?
Sure. The entrepreneur's game will launch in the next 30 to 45 days. We're finalizing the content. We're testing it. We're making sure things are working well. This is designed to help those who go through many of the challenges that you've talked about on this program, which are, there are substantive issues, there are legal structural issues to being an entrepreneur and getting your, you know, what I often call the vehicle, which is probably a technical term, but you know, what is that rocket ship that you're designing to, for your experience, for your venture? So there's these technical domains that are relevant to it, but there's also this emotional dimension to it, which is, I am now feeling this way. I'm at this path in the journey. Is my world getting smaller or is it getting bigger? And so what the entrepreneur's game is a multi-domain pathway to helping to explore those issues and to reveal them through a very engaging way. So this is taking the insights and wisdoms and methods that I've used historically and that others have used, but then creating a vehicle again for how an entrepreneur that's out there that's going through those challenges in their own time, you know, early in the morning or late at night or when they're on a flight, can be able to use that as a way to reflect into a particular problem, challenge, or opportunity that they have and make a better choice about what the next step is. So Quick and Dirty is it's targeted for anybody who's at the forefront of entrepreneurship in a very strict sense, but anybody who's in dealing with a corporate innovation program or is a growth opportunity. When it could be a project where it's like, you know, we need to figure out a new market or a new pathway in a traditional business, but that's not our core strength. We historically have been operators and not creators. Is there tools out there that can help us to navigate that pathway? And that's precisely what the entrepreneur's game is designed to help people do, is walk with them down a pathway that helps to open up new worlds and new experiences.
I love it. I love it. Is there a website where we can go and like get on a list at this point?
Sure. It's the domain name for this will be theentrepreneursgame.com. So entrepreneurs is plural, theentrepreneursgame.com. It's not live yet. So again, we'll launch in the next 30 to 45 days. And once it launches, certainly join the list and join in. And we're getting everything ironed out and would love to have you join us.
Excellent. Excellent. So theentrepreneursgame.com, it goes live. We'll link to that. Ironheart.com. .com is the .co.
.co.
.co. .co is the main advisory company right now. And then at Maylander is Chris on Twitter, which I'm sure he will talk about and announce the Entrepreneur's Game when it goes live there as well. I'll link to all that in the show notes when you're done walking, jogging, working out, whatever it is you're doing right now. They'll be there for you. Chris, thank you so much once again for taking the time to join me on the show. Thanks for sharing so openly. And please just keep doing what you're doing because it is awesome to watch.
Thanks, John. This has been great.
What if you could discover what people are saying about you and your brand in real time? Brand 24 gives you instant access to mentions about your brand across the web, from social networks to influential publishers. Start discovering what people are saying about you with Brand 24. Go to brand24.com/hack. And for being a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, you're going to get a 14-day free trial and an exclusive 50% off your first 3 months. Once again, that's Brand 24. That's brand24.com/hack to get started today. Well, that was a lot of fun. We got to some interesting places, Chris and I, and we got to some different places than I was even expecting, which is always really cool in a conversation when the conversation kind of veers off into territory I wasn't expecting. So that was cool to be part of, but now we've reached the part of the show that I really, really, really enjoy. The part where I get to go back. I get to go back and I get to listen to the conversation like you do. So I did. I went back and I listened to the conversation Chris and I had. Then I went back and I listened again. That last time through the conversation, there was something that Chris had said that I had missed. It had slipped past me and I have no idea how, but it did. But this last time through, it caught my ear. It was it. It was the one thing that Chris said. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
You go through these cycles where you're really super jazzed about a project and you're being highly efficient, really productive and so forth. And then when you go into that wave and the wave starts to, you know, you go down into the trough and it's not quite as sexy. It's quite not quite as dynamic as it was. That's when you start to check out and not make as good of decisions. And then you've got to figure out ways to make it dynamic again.
And that's the hack. Chris, Chris, Chris. I love this. You go through these cycles where you're super jazzed about a project. We all know this. We've all felt this. We all wish we could feel this all the time. So initially, when Chris said this during the conversation, I thought of Seth Godin's The Dip. But this isn't The Dip, actually. This is something else, because The Dip is actually seeing if the market or if anything really is worth it, and then you have to kind of push through those dips. But this is losing that sort of excitement about a project, which comes in cycles. You can't just stay jazzed about it all the time. You can't just stay riding that peak, right? There has to be sort of troughs. But then I love Chris's twist on this, where he's like, you have to kind of look at yourself, have that self-awareness to think, why was I jazzed about it? What was it? And then work to get back to that place. Because when you're in those troughs and you're not jazzed about it, you make bad decisions. You don't think clearly, and you follow through maybe on the wrong things, or you act on the wrong things impulsively rather than the way you need to be guiding yourself. So finding that, and I think this actually would go with being aware when you are jazzed about it, what are you jazzed about? So that, not so that you can constantly say, because there's still, like I said, has to be these troughs, but you try and make them smaller, right? If you can make those smaller by self-awareness and finding that out, then you can get back to making smart decisions. Get back to being on the right path, because that's what your company needs. That's what your team needs. That's what your customers need from you. They need you having that vision and being able to clearly see where it is you are leading and where it is you need to take everyone. Chris, thank you so very much. All right, hacktheentrepreneur.com is the website. It's brand new. Go check it out. I think you might dig it. And iPhone users, iTunes users, you people, you ones out there, just, I'm one of those people too, don't worry. But I would love a rating and review. It's been a while since I've asked for you to give them, so I'm going to ask now. Go into it on your phone or on your computer, whatever it is. If you're on your phone right now listening, you can just leave a review right in the app or whatever it is you use to listen to podcasts. If you're on an Android phone, awesome. Google Play, iHeartRadio, wherever it is you've come from, wherever it is you're listening, ratings and reviews help the show so very, very much. It's crucial. And I don't ask much from you, but I do ask that. Please, I would appreciate it. And I don't know, leave your name in there if you can, and I'll check it, and I would like to say thanks. So, see what we can do. All right, it's been fun. I will not take any more of your time. I absolutely appreciate you stopping by today. I know you have a lot of choices, and I know you don't rate and review all of them, but thank you. And until next time, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.